This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. Welcome, Adriano Del Monte, Rick D'Andrea here, taking you through the next couple of hours, talking all things international football. Rick, for the last year, we've been the voice of football in Australia and around the world. It's our birthday today, so happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you too.
And all the team, of course. A massive thank you to all of our loyal sponsors and all of you, our dedicated fans who have supported us over the last 12 months. We look forward to bringing you another big year ahead of talking all things, of course, international and local football here in Australia. But a big show in store today, whereby, of course, we are talking about the Ballon d'Or nominees. We're down from 50 to 30. That will go down to 20 to 10 to 5 to 3. And eventually we'll have our winner confirmed early next year. So we'll bring you those 30. Some interesting players left out, of course, the men's, the women's, and the Young Player Award as well. Plenty of other news now doing the rounds. We're into the second international break of the season. We're going to cast our eye over a few of the major talking points that have taken place to this point and assess where a couple of clubs are at with certain things. There are a couple of big clubs with managers who, well, their positions now are certainly under fire. Real Madrid and even Bayern Munich. Couple of those. So plenty more to come. We are, of course, streaming this first hour as we do every day live on Facebook. Second hour, we will continue streaming via our app and our website, footballnationradio.com. So stay tuned to that. We are, of course, at FNR underscore radio on Twitter. Rick, the news to get us underway, please.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Happy first birthday to all the FNR listeners out there. As you touched on, the men's and women's Ballon d'Or nominees have been revealed overnight by the establishment France Football. The men's award has 30 nominees, while the women's award, held for the first time, has 15. The Trophée Coppa nominations will also be given to the best male player under the 21 years of age rank, and they have also been revealed and nominated down to 10. According to multiple reports out of Spain, it seems as if Real Madrid coach Julen Lopetegui will be given until the Clásico against Barcelona to turn the team's fortunes around. Los Blancos have failed to win a match since defeating Espanyol 3 weeks ago and not scored a goal in their last four outings in all competitions. Arsenal have revealed that the club has signed a new five-year, £300 million shirt sponsorship deal with Adidas from the 2019-2020 EPL season. Currently, the Gunners are sponsored by Puma, and this goes along with their £200 million sponsorship of Emirates. Staying in England, the England FA will investigate comments made by Manchester United coach Jose Mourinho at the conclusion of their match against Newcastle. Cameras caught the tactician murmuring and muttering profanities in his native tongue, and they will investigate. Two little bits of news to round up the day. Juventus have finally ruled out that they will not be going after Manchester United star midfielder Paul Pogba. Sporting director Fabio Paratici has ruled out the move, saying that they are content with the players that they have and will not be getting the French World Cup star. And finally, Paris Saint-Germain defender Thiago Silva, we know he's nearing the end of his tenure as a player. He has revealed that he wishes to actually become a coach one day once his career on the field is over. Adrian, that is a snapshot of the news for this happy first year anniversary here at FNR Football Nation Radio.
Well done, Rick. Smooth as always. Some big stories coming out there. Good to see Arsenal doing some wonderful things off the pitch. Of course, I suppose that's what good form on the pitch does. All of a sudden, on the verge of another very, very big deal there. £300 million.
For £300 million. Like I said, £200 million with Emirates. They've also got a First Rwanda logo on their sleeve. So there's, you know, you're already looking at the best part of £500 million worth of deals just on the jersey that you wear.
Certainly one of the clubs where things are going right this season. Well, certainly based on what's been happening in recent seasons for the Gunners. Not so much the story for a couple of the other heavyweights of European football, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich amongst those. But we'll get to those clubs and what's been happening there a little later on in the program, because we'll start with, before we get to all your other news, we'll start with the big talking point of the day, of course, the Ballon d'Or nominees. Now, 50 to 30. First question, why do they bother? Is there any point?
It feels like an episode of Survivor all of a sudden. They've just culled, you know, a few people around. I'm waiting to see where Jeff Prost is all of a sudden, whether he's going to appear with his, you know, with his little torch that puts out the flames. I'm waiting for this. When will the next cull be happening, and what will it be down to? Because it certainly has that feel about it, doesn't it?
I don't understand what the point is. You just let 20 players move to the side, move on. It just gives us something to talk about, I suppose, especially now with the international break upon us. But as always, it does spring a few surprises, a couple of surprise inclusions in the final 30, some of them who are even surprise inclusions to me in the final 50. But your thoughts overall before we get to, obviously, another discussion on who actually goes on to win this thing, but your thoughts overall on the 30 and any of the potential surprises?
In all honesty, I think France football have actually gotten the majority right. I won't say every decision right, but I'll say
can't get them all
the
right.
Best part, we'll say between 20 and 25 of the 30 that are in this final list are right.
And realistically, before you go on, if 20 to 25 of them are right, you'd imagine those 5 to 10 that are wrong aren't going to win the award.
Correct, correct. But there are the very, very big surprises. For me, I think it's the first line, when the first 5 were revealed, because France Football did it very interesting this year. They actually revealed them in 5 and 6 player segments. They put out 5 or 6 tweets saying, this is the first 5, this is the next, so on and so forth. But when I saw the first list and I saw the name Karim Benzema make it, I literally had to scratch my head and work out how a player with 5 goals, yes, he did win a Champions League, how did he even get on this list?
No idea. We questioned how he got on the list of 50. His return from the entire season, all competitions, was 47 games, 12 goals across all competitions, 5 league goals. I have no idea how Karim Benzema has made that list. Obviously not part of the French World Cup squad. Sure won what there was to win at Real Madrid, the Champions League, once again. But that was, for me, immediately where I was scratching my head as well.
And I'm not even going to go beyond that first line. We have put up a graphic on our social media. But definitely, Karim Benzema is the first question and the first big query that I have to this list of 30.
Comparing him to another striker in a similar position who did positive things at club level without winning anything. Now, of course, Benzema has won the Champions League, but so did 20 other Real Madrid players. Well, maybe not playing as regularly as Benzema, but you get my point. Chiro Immobile, who was a co-winner of the Coppa Cannonieri Award for top scorer in Italy, 53 games, so 6 games more than Benzema, for 41 goals across all competitions, and his side made a decent run in Europe as well. That just does not add up for me at all. I don't know if France Football has anything to do with that, but Benzema, the numbers just don't stack up, and that is one of his worst returns in a season ever. So to be listed, shortlisted as a top 30 nominee for the Ballon d'Or is a bit of a joke for me, but again, clearly won't win the award, or you'd imagine make the next cut.
If he makes the next cut, I'll eat my hat. I'll go get an FNR hat, the one that you see behind us, and I'll physically cut it up and start eating it live on air on Facebook Live.
You won't have to do that. He won't be there.
No. But if we can continue on the list, go a little bit further down. I think the next one has to be, how did Isco make it? That's another big query that
What's the logic there for you with Isco?
Well, the only logic that I can come up with is he's part of this Real Madrid team that won a Champions League. But he's not even in the starting 11, or at least wasn't, in their dominant 6 months in which they actually won the Champions League. Yeah, okay, you can make the argument that he was the pivotal figure for Spain at the World Cup, but what did Spain ultimately do?
Yeah.
They bowed out. They really didn't. They left no impression in the Russian edition. So for me, not sure how Isco makes the cut other than being a Real Madrid player.
Of course, some of the other players included Aguero, Alisson, wonderful season. Bale, solid season. Cavani, Courtois in there, Eden Hazard, all your regulars. We get to the top players after that. But look, all the top players in there, there aren't too many surprises for me, if I'm being honest. Obviously, a few very unfortunate that missed out. I think Lewandowski, incredibly unfortunate to miss out. And in actual fact, the first time since 1997 that a Bayern Munich player has not been in the final 30.
Yeah. Well, so, oh, there's actually a few more surprises than just Lewandowski
well,
for me.
Lewandowski for me is a big one. I know you're big on a PSG player in particular.
Yeah. For me, well, where do you want to go with? Come on, I'll let you name it.
Di Maria. You're not happy with his
Should
absence?
Have been in there.
Yeah.
Should have been in there. If all of a sudden you have Neymar, and yes, Neymar did have a very sensational season, but as soon as Neymar, the Brazilian international, went down with his foot injury, who stepped up?
Yeah.
For me, it has to be Di Maria. Who carried, in my eyes, Argentina in that round of 16 clash and ultimately scored one of the cracking goals of the FIFA World Cup, ultimately beaten by Benjamin Pavard?
Same man.
Same man. Who has helped, I won't say led, but has definitely helped PSG to their 9 wins from 9 in Ligue 1 and their cracking start to the season? Yes, he may not be the most pivotal point, but it has to be the Argentine. He needs to have been at least put in this 30, in my eyes, definitely ahead of one Karim Benzema.
Yeah, I can understand that. Look, they have gone with a few goalkeepers, All Blacks in there, Hugo Lloris.
Deserving All Black. He absolutely had a very strong season. And that stat that we mentioned, I think it was last week, where he'd had 70 goals at least.
71 conceded, 72 clean sheets.
Something like that. So, and obviously he led Atletico Madrid to that Europa League final victory.
Yep.
Cannot be discounted
Look,
whatsoever.
It's very, very tough. We know who will be there or thereabouts come the end, but certainly a few unfortunate ones missing out. Diego Godin in there is deserved, but maybe a little contentious given some of the numbers that a few of the attackers put up, but still another solid season and, of course, World Cup by the Uruguayan.
But it's nice to actually see him in there.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing is, where's Samuel Umtiti? Wins the double with Barcelona, wins the World Cup with France, not in it.
Well, there's the argument. Godin's in the same bracket as Antoine Griezmann, less the World Cup. Umtiti with Barca, they won more domestically, and, of course, a World Cup.
Yeah.
How does that make sense for Diego Godin, who I'm a big fan of, but obviously a few question marks.
What about the current, or he's now been sort of a little bit superseded as the Real Madrid goalkeeper? He wins the UEFA Best Goalkeeper Award, makes the best 11, makes the FIFA Best 11, wins the Champions League, plays at the World Cup for Costa Rica and is essentially their brightest light.
Who knows?
Why didn't Keylor Navas make it?
Who knows? Mario Mandzukic?
Well, I think he actually deserved to make it. I mean, you've got to imagine he played at a position, he led Juventus to a double, he's now leading the Juventus line as the sole striker, and he helped Croatia in making a World Cup final. I think deserving to make it. Yes, a little bit interesting that a lot of people are now starting to say, well, why did the former Croatian international make it? But no, I think he is justified at least to make a 30. My eyes will be popping very, very wide if all of a sudden he makes, say, a final 10 or even final three.
I don't think so, but he's one of three Croatian internationals to be a part of that list. Of course, the other two, very obvious in Luka Modric, the favourite to win the award, and Ivan Rakitic as well. But Mandzukic, look, That's a great reward for a solid season again at club and national team level with Croatia, of course, going deep in the FIFA World Cup. But yeah, there are a few very, very interesting surprises. Comments made by Antoine Griezmann, our favourite player when it comes to these individual awards, who's been having his say on everything and anything. Griezmann has come out and said, quote, whatever happens, a Frenchman has to win this Ballon d'Or. Your thoughts?
I can understand where he comes from. I just don't know whether they will. And that's the only thing. I mean, if we run through the list of the Frenchmen that are in contention here, Paul Pogba, N'Golo Kante, obviously he himself. I don't know. I'm a bit shaky. I don't think...
Lottie, four of them.
Four, Lottie. Lottie definitely won't win it.
No, we know that.
Griezmann himself would be the only one that I can honestly see. Maybe Kante a little bit.
Varane?
Normally they don't give it to defenders. Last one was Cannavaro 06. So normally they don't give the Ballon d'Or to a defender. Can't see that one happening.
Normally. But if you put everything on paper here, I'm just going to mount a quick
call
here
for
Rafa Varane. But if you put everything down on paper here, there's no player who has won
everything
more prized trophies and silverware in the last 12 months than Varane.
No, I absolutely agree.
He doesn't make sense. I suppose it won't be the likely outcome that he does win, but it will make sense, rather, that if he actually were to win. So do not be surprised if Varane is the surprise final 10 or final 5 or who knows, maybe
in the mix.
Top 3 candidate.
In the mix, definitely.
With the Champions League and the World Cup.
And the French flavour to the awards.
And the French flavour to the awards. Who are his international teammates there? Lloris plays for Tottenham. Kante, Chelsea, Griezmann, Atleti. No other French player did that double.
No.
The World Cup and the Champions League, the two coveted crowns in world football. So he has to be in the mix, and I think he will be the last standing Frenchman with Griezmann, who still obviously considers himself a favourite to win the award, which I love. If we're looking outside of France, now just given the developments of recent weeks, again, not much has changed. The Ballon d'Or, we know, is a 12-month award. We know it's a calendar year award. But has anything changed in the last fortnight or now with the couple of months remaining to maybe shift who you think will win this award?
Not too much. Not too much.
So you're staying with Luka Modric?
I'm going to still stay with Luka Modric. I mean, you win the Champions League, you make the World Cup final. You are recognised by the second biggest institution in world
football.
And the Golden Ball. I think for me, you have to sort of stick with him at this stage.
Okay, so give me a tomorrow they announce, I think it's next is top 10, then they go 5 and 3. Give me your 5.
So my 5 at this stage
you feel will be
Modric, Ronaldo, because if you have to disclude what he did in the first half of the season at Real Madrid,
which is a massive case as to why people think he will still win.
So I still think he now becomes a part of this.
Yep.
Antoine Griezmann must be there.
Yep.
Absolutely. Varane, I think I will have to throw him in, other than the whole sentiment sake that does come along with it. But I think you have to put him in there. Mm-hmm. As for the 5, I don't know. Messi would be the one, I think, for me. But that's because of what he has previously done. But I struggle to fill that 5th.
So no Salah?
No Salah, no.
Mbappe?
Mbappe, well, yeah, you really start to mount the case. He only really comes into contention basically because of what he did, in my eyes, 2 nights ago. Or last night,
sure. Really.
He hasn't really had that stellar season. He's only scored, I think, 1 or 2 goals for PSG this season, other than the quadruple that he got the other night against Lyon. So for me, I wouldn't put him in the mix. But if you look at the credentials, yes, he did win the treble with PSG. Yes, he did lead France to the World Cup. Yes, he was given the Golden Boy Award of the FIFA World Cup.
Very likely to win the...
And I think that's where the differentiation will come with France football is they will more than likely give him the Golden Boy Award, and they'll give this to one of the other individuals that I mentioned.
Silvio has come through and said, Di Maria is an awesome club, but disagree he lacks for his country. Aguero, Messi, Ronaldo.
Ooh, well, Aguero is the interesting one. He didn't really have that really strong World Cup. As we remember, Argentina really did struggle and only had one quality game that helped them get through the World Cup.
And also City in Europe, not much.
No.
Not much at all. Look, for me, my 5, certainly Modric will be 1 or 2. Ronaldo will be 1, 2 or 3. Varane will be in the final 5. Yep. Griezmann will be in the final 5. And Messi will certainly be in the final 5. They won't leave Messi out. The unlucky ones will be Mbappe, Salah, I suppose. Rakitic, I suppose, as well, based off what he did rounding out the top 10, and then maybe a De Bruyne with maybe one of the goalkeepers, a Hugo Lloris, or take your pick of someone else, but throw Neymar in there into the mix as well. But those will be my 5. I'm very confident Ronaldo, Messi, Modric, Varane, and Antoine Griezmann will be your final 5, and good luck with the winner there. But I'll tell you what, if Varane were to win this award, it would make a little bit of sense. It just seems unlikely given Modric's golden ball, I think, is the one thing that has him separated now slightly from the rest, because obviously made that World Cup final perform so well all the way through the tournament for his nation. But it will be a thrilling race because for the first time in a long time, the threat for Ronaldo and Messi is real, and we could see one of them finally dethroned after 10 years of dominance. Yeah. Of course, 5 Ballon d'Ors apiece for the two greats of world football. Let's have a quick look at the Women's Award. So 15 nominees. Now, you said for the first time
correct
ever they've announced 15 nominees. Australia's Sam Kerr is amongst the finalists there. We're getting used to some of these top-class women's players who have been in the mix for a number of awards. Hergeberg, our favourite from Olympique Lyonnais, a wonderful player there. Rapinoe from the United States. Marta, the Brazilian legend, who, of course, recently won
the best FIFA award.
Quite controversially, some will say, but lots of quality in the mix there. For me, I can't go past Hergeberg again, purely due to Lyon's dominance in the women's Ligue 1, but also because of their exploits in the Women's Champions League, where she scored a lot of goals in very short time. But again, how much do you read into what just took place in the FIFA Best Awards, given the fact that Marta won? I don't think, for the case of the Ballon d'Or, France football will award it to Marta. And again, I feel the Lyon women's players will have that slight edge
yeah.
given the French relation and dominance that they had both domestically and in Europe.
Well, if it's either going to be Hergeberg or it's going to be her teammate and Jennifer Marazon, the mm-hmm. Germany captain, they're the two that I'm currently sensing. Obviously, Hergeberg was the one who put the ball into the back of the net, but it was Marazon leading the team, leading and winning the double with Lyon, leading Germany to the Women's World Cup in France next year. I think they're the two. I'm going to obviously mount a case for Sam Kerr. You can't be in two national, or not national, domestic competitions, top 11s, be regarded as basically the best player in both and not have a real chance of actually winning this award. So they're the four that I'm more or less going to
be... Does her lack of silverware hinder that?
Possibly it might, but...
Because some of these girls have won all there is to win. And again, that's what we're discussing in the men's version. Mm. Clearly, Varane, had he not won the World Cup and Champions League, would not be even in the top...
No, that's
the
true.
Top 30, potentially. This is the same argument here with the women's. Obviously, so much talent. They're all 15, very, very talented in their own right. But is it enough to just say, okay, regular starter here, regular starter there?
But she hasn't just been a regular starter. She's been a top goal scorer in two of the top competitions in world women's football.
Sure.
So for me, it's a double edge here, because I do think that it will come down to Hergeberg or Marazon.
Mm-hmm.
Even Sakai, I don't think... Would Kimagai, I don't think we'll make it, even though she is also a part of this team. I don't think ultimately that will be the difference. But I still think Sam Kerr might have a very good chance of possibly winning this title out of all of them.
Well, that's 15. It may go down to 10, 5, 3, something very soon. We'll keep you posted with that. Very interesting there with a lot of talented women at the top of their game at the moment. Just quickly, the Young Boy Award, so the Copper Trophy. It goes by some interesting names in this. There's a clear favourite who will certainly win. There is no doubt in the world that Kylian Mbappe, he certainly wins.
Can't we just narrow this down to one? Why are we even down to 10 at this stage?
It is Mbappe. He will win. But just a look at a couple of the others, of course. Justin Kluivert, who's now made the move from the Eredivisie to Roma in Italy. Good on him to make the top 10, but I don't think he's in the top few of that. Still yet to really prove himself at a top club in the Champions League or a top competition, but good to see the United States international Pulisic in there. Wonderful player who just keeps getting better and better and still only 20 years of age.
Yeah, I think if you had to sort of narrow down a three, I think for me it has to be Mbappe, Pulisic, and what Trent Alexander-Arnold did with Liverpool and the England national team. They'd be the three. Donnarumma, unfortunately, won't get it. Patrick Coutinho, despite his very strong goal-scoring record, I don't think would be in that final three. But I think those three would be the ones to watch out for.
I'd have to agree with you, obviously. Alexander-Arnold, what he was able to achieve, both club and country. Pulisic, he's really established himself as a Bundesliga star. Donnarumma and Coutinho in 4 and 5. Coutinho's goal-scoring record is one that goes really under the radar. At the age of just 20, he averages 0.4 goals per game, which, compared to some stars of old, you know, Ronaldo at the same age, 0.16, this is Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi 0.37, Zlatan 0.37, Henri 0.22, Francesco Totti 0.15. Cutrone is as good of a young player as we've seen, and I question if he was playing at a club. Now, AC Milan, we know that they're a fallen giant. We know that they're still a big club, but obviously not anywhere near the level that they should be. But if he was playing at a top club at the moment who were performing well, playing in the Champions League and doing big things, he'd be regarded, all right, clearly not as good as Mbappe, but he'd be regarded as one of the best young players
World football. He'd be higher up in the nomination list all of a sudden.
But even regardless of the nomination list, he'd be regarded as a talent of the future and one of the best players potentially to come.
It'd be nice to see if Gennaro Gattuso would actually play him and Gonzalo Higuain in a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-1-2 or whatever combination and tactical setup he could actually muster, and see how he would go alongside the Argentine. And you'd think if the two of them were to work together, how much faster and how much quicker the Italian international would develop.
For sure.
And that record would only get better and better.
Well, just on that quickly before we move away from these awards, those rumours have continued about Zlatan returning to AC Milan for the second half of the season. What impact, positive or negative, would that have on that player right there, Kutsunori?
Well, positive, obviously, Higgins gets to develop under two individuals who are very, very different players.
Two world-class strikers.
Absolutely world-class. But the negative would be is that you would think the fans would want to see a Zlatan/Higuain combination up top. Therefore, Kutsunori would only be the first sub at the best. He'd go down the pecking order. So that would obviously then diminish whatever chance he actually does get to play, but it also diminishes his quality on the pitch because he isn't getting that very top level ability to play week in, week out.
Well, we'll see. Those reports certainly continue Zlatan's potential return to the Rossoneri in January, but they are your nominees for the upcoming awards. Again, I believe it's early January.
Correct.
The awards will be handed out. So the men's, women's and young boy awards.
We'd love to hear everyone's thoughts. Do get involved via social media, Facebook Live. You know where we all are. Let us know who you think should win. As Silvio has done, as he sort of touched on earlier, Aguero, Messi, Ronaldo for the men's final three.
There you go. So let's just recap. So you're saying Modric?
Modric, Ronaldo has to be in there. Messi, Griezmann and Varane has to be in the top five. Can't narrow it down more than that at this stage.
I think we
might be actually speaking the same sort of language.
We're in agreement now. Modric, Ronaldo, Messi. Not in that order.
No.
But we'll see. Varane, Griezmann from a France perspective. Ronaldo, Messi just given their dominance. Of course, Modric, well, certainly the favourite will be in the final few for sure. Tough to pick a winner from that, so good luck to France football. But we'll keep you posted with the developments there. Again, further nominees to come as they cut those lists down as the weeks go on. Now let's go around to those other news stories before we get to some assessments of the season that has been thus far up until this second international break. But the big story making news headlines, Real Madrid and Lopetegui. Now, during the World Cup, I'm going to repeat this because I said it yesterday. During the World Cup, actually before Spain's first game, when this all came out, we were very confident that Lopetegui had the toughest job in recent history in world football, given the fact that he's coming into this side, really difficult circumstances. He's left Spain. He's missed the World Cup. Real Madrid have just won three straight Champions Leagues in two and a half seasons under Zinedine Zidane. How does he succeed? And already, they're saying he could be on the way out as soon as, well, this month.
Yeah, the Clásico is when they are touting all of a sudden, should Los Blancos keep firing those Blancos to everybody that they play against, they could actually be having to look for a new manager, more or less, in and around the start of November. It's a very, very sad story.
It is incredible. And there were reports on a Spanish radio platform last night, Cadena said, saying that Florentino Perez, the Real Madrid president, had actually already decided to sack Lopetegui, but executives at the club succeeded in making him change his mind, convincing them to give him until the Clásico, which obviously, with the international break now, is only a handful of games away. Give him two or three more games to get things right, and if not, he'll be moved on. I'm not surprised at all, but unfortunately, Lopetegui has been thrown in the deep end here. It's very tough. He's obviously without a number of key players through injury. He's lost the greatest player the club's ever had as well. So it could not have been any tougher, this initiation for him. And despite all the issues they've had, they're still up there. They're third in the standings.
Exactly.
A point or two behind Sevilla. It's not as if that the wheels have completely fallen off. It's just that we know how Florentino Perez and Real Madrid operate. We know how they function. This was never, if you said that this would be the situation, this isn't a surprise that these reports are now surfacing. What are we, 2 months into a new season?
I think the only thing that has surprised us is how quick it has come on.
Very quickly.
We would have anticipated this to sort of come on more or less during the January transfer window, maybe even going into February, March. Maybe Real Madrid were out of the race to win La Liga. Maybe they'd just been bundled out of the Champions League. That's when you would have thought these murmurs would have started to surface. It's just very, very strange that after, what, eight games in La Liga, all of a sudden we are talking about Julen Lopetegui and his tenure at the club being under serious threat.
Well, I suppose while we say it is early, it's the fact that they've gone on that terrible goalless stretch. It's the fact that they've really showed very little in their attacking threat and movement going forward, and they're clearly not playing the same football they were playing under Zinedine Zidane with that same level of confidence, and that has now been proven by that 1-0 defeat at the weekend to Alaves very late on, which saw them fail to score for the fourth match in succession, 409 minutes, Rick, without a goal, their second worst ever run. And if they go goalless again in the next game, where they return home, I think they take on Levante. That will be an all-time low, and Lopetegui will be very close to being shown the door there. But then again, Barcelona aren't playing the best football, and with that Clásico to come, they could beat Barcelona. It's not that this Barcelona side are invincible at the present time. So it's a really interesting time in Spanish football, of course, with Sevilla leading the way, 2 points clear of Real, who are fourth, Barcelona and Atleti second and third with 15. Ivan, hello to you. He's come to and said, happy birthday, guys.
Thank you.
Be a breath of fresh air. Pleasure meeting you all and enjoyed our chats. All the best. Thank you very much. Again, thank you to all our listeners, our sponsors, all our fans in Australia and around the world. FNR today celebrating our first birthday on a day where the Ballon d'Or nominees have been revealed. We touched on that earlier. We will be touching on that again in our second hour.
But isn't it interesting now that as soon as the murmurings about Julen Lopetegui, sorry to bring this back to more footballing discussions here, but isn't it interesting that all of a sudden after the murmurings about Julen Lopetegui's position and tenure as the Real Madrid coach, that within the same breath, within the same sentences, the Harry Kane to Real Madrid, the Neymar to Real Madrid, the Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid, and of course, the Eden Hazard to Real Madrid discussions all appear within the same hours?
Well, yes, it's a bit strange. But
it's
again,
too coincidental for me, Adrian. It's too coincidental.
Eden Hazard has been well documented for a long time. In actual fact, we've done some research here going through the archives, and over the last months, four of the last 5 months, he's made comments referencing his desire to return, or to make a move, rather, to his dream club, Real Madrid. In June, they know what they have to do if they want me, is what he was quoted as saying. In July, I've been linked to all the big clubs. You all know my preferred destination. In September, I'll tell you the truth. After the World Cup, I was keen to move, as my dream is to play one day in Spain. And in October, in my head, sometimes I wake up in the morning and think I want to go. Again, publicly admitting that I don't want to lie, playing for Real Madrid is my dream. Hazard will move to Real Madrid at some point because they still need to replace
the greatest of them all.
And Hazard is that man to, again, no one will ever, I suppose, live up to the expectation and fulfill the void left by Ronaldo. But Hazard is as close as you'll get from an informed player, arguably the most informed player in world football at the moment. Hard to go past Eden Hazard, who's playing some tremendous football for Chelsea.
The comments that he seems to be making and has made very much over the last few months, they remind me of what Thibaut Courtois was saying prior to his move to Real Madrid. So maybe,
They've obviously been chatting.
They've obviously worked out a little bit of a strategy. We think that the former Chelsea player and obviously the current superstar in world football. So very, very similar comments and motions been going through at the same time.
Now, just quickly back to the managerial situation. Obviously, Lopetegui, the problem is that Real Madrid have always been known, particularly off the back of World Cups, to bring in big, big names. Mm. They didn't do that in 2018, and that's the first time in a very long time that they really didn't bring in a top-class talent. Yes, Mariano Diaz, 40 million, returned to the club, but Mariano Diaz is not the James Rodriguez they brought in from the 2014
World Cup. Well, who did they bring in? Let's quickly run through it. Thibaut Courtois. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can argue he's a big name, but not overly. Alvaro Odriozola. Who?
Exactly.
No disrespect to the former Real Sociedad man, but, you know, unfortunately he isn't
the
big.
They're not those superstar names, those Galacticos-type names that they...
This isn't your Luis Figo, Ronaldo Fenomeno, David Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo, Kaká, James Rodriguez. These aren't these sort of ilk names. So it's a little bit of a different approach here.
That's why Hazard, for me, is that next one, and I think that he will make that move at some point to the Bernabeu to join Real Madrid. But again, the final one on the coaching situation, Spanish reports saying that already two replacements are in mind. One being Santiago Solari, of course, the former player of Real Madrid and played for Inter as well.
He did.
Didn't he? Inter
many, many years ago.
He did. Now, current Real Madrid B boss. If he were to join the club, it would be, for me, in just a temporary capacity. I don't think that they'd put him into the top job with the view of being there long, long term. Who knows? Maybe not. But he is being linked. The other one who is being linked, certainly an established coach in his own right, Antonio Conte, who they regard, again, according to these reports, as the best available manager currently not in a job. That makes sense to me. Would Conte be a suitable fit for this Real Madrid outfit?
I'm sure he's got a very, very big paycheck from Chelsea at the moment that is helping him to live his lifestyle. But in all honesty, I don't know if Conte would be the right fit, to be honest. Yes, he might be able to play that 3-5-2 formation that he has sort of made synonymous at both Juventus and Chelsea, but I don't think Real Madrid and the players would really be suited to that style of football. So I don't know at the moment whether he is the right fit. Sure, if you look at it in terms of a high-profile manager who is available, yes, he doesn't have a week-to-week coach, yes, he'd be the perfect fit. But I'm thinking, tactically speaking here, I don't think he actually does suit Los Blancos and their style of football.
If he were to play their style of football,
which would be a 4-3-3 at this stage,
is his character and approach suitable for the group?
That's the biggest question. We saw what sort of happened towards the end of his tenure at Chelsea, where the dressing room fell away. I just don't know, after season two or season three at Real Madrid, if he would still have the success and the dressing room, in more of my eyes, in their favour.
Well,
if he
were to join, he'd potentially reunite with Thibaut Courtois and potentially Eden Hazard. Who knows? Maybe that would facilitate and allow him to better integrate into a new look Real Madrid outfit. But again, a lot needs to happen for that, you would think. But Antonio Conte, yes, Spanish reports saying is linked as a top candidate to potentially replace Lopetegui should he be sacked.
I mean, the other one that probably should be mentioned at some stage as a coach who's done the hard yards around Europe, developed his style, really had a lot of success with it in my eyes, and that's Guti. Mm. He has to be, I think, in the mix.
Former legend of the club, of course.
We all know what they are like. We all know that Real Madrid do pride themselves on having developed some of the best players and turning them into very, very good candidates to coach the team. Besiktas, as we know, has done quite well under the former Spanish and former Real Madrid player. I wonder if there might be a few voices from the Florentino Perez camp maybe giving a quick call to Turkey to see what their former player might be up to these days.
Look, again, they didn't lure a big-name player. I feel that they're going to go for a big, big-name coach, and that's why if I had to place my confidence somewhere, it's Conte at this point in time. But who knows? Lots needs to happen there, and Lopetegui needs to lose his job first and foremost. But again, if that happens, I will not be surprised at all. I did feel it was almost mission impossible for the former Spanish boss. Now, another manager who, well, is he safe, is he not? It's our favourite. It's been 36 minutes, but the time is now. United's Jose Mourinho.
Countdown goes to zero again.
Nothing's going right for him. So he's been caught swearing after the win against Newcastle.
Yes.
For a manager who's under so much pressure at the moment, I don't know exactly what the comments that were made, but again, yeah, nothing seems to be going right for the Portuguese.
So what happened with the Portuguese tactician is that after the win against Newcastle, and it was a very heroic and a very strong come-from-behind win for
Absolutely.
The Red Devils, he was sort of caught muttering under his breath by the cameras, swearing and saying some profanities in Portuguese.
Okay.
Now, obviously, those comments, the English FA have not liked them, and they are investigating this further. So we won't know an outcome. We won't be told at this stage whether he gets a 6-match touchline ban, which I think is outrageous. But nonetheless, he might have to pay a fine, and he might get told, you know what, Jose, no more anymore.
All right. Well, nothing going right, as I said. No, we're not no clear on his future. Again, international break now. Sure, they had this win, but how much does that win mean for them? Not much, I don't think, in regards to his future and being safe there, because United are a club that demand more than just coming back from 2-0 down to beat a Newcastle side really struggling and out of form by 3-2. But that's the latest there. His opposite number, his sidekick at United, I suppose, Paul Pogba. He's not going anywhere, they're saying. So Juventus, Paratici has come out and said that we were never interested, we're not interested. I don't read into that too much, if I'm being very honest. But again, Pogba was still linked to Barcelona, so I don't think that his future at United is secure.
Well, his future at United might not be secure, but his future at Juventus is a definite ruled out. Won't be going back. That's the difference
I still don't think so. Keep in mind, Paratici has been linked away from Juve as well, but then also has been strongly committed to Juve. I'm not so sure with the situations that's unfolding at Juventus and what's happening at United at the moment that we can believe anything that's being said, but they are the latest reports.
So he is, and that is Fabio Paratici, has basically said, we might love Pogba, we love what he did, but he is not coming back.
Okay.
Which almost says to me, okay, the race for Paul Pogba is down to maybe a handful of teams.
I'd say one.
One, at the most, two.
Who's
well, the second one has to be a return to France and maybe Paris Saint-Germain. But that is it. And I'm not even thinking that that will be the one that would happen. For me, Barcelona.
Okay.
I think that's more or less signed, sealed, not delivered, but his future more or less will be at the Blaugrana if one day he were to leave Manchester United.
Which I think that day will certainly be coming shortly, irrespective of who takes over. Of course, we brought you the reports yesterday that the agent, Alain Migliaccio, of Zinedine Zidane, has confirmed that Zidane was never going to Real Madrid. He's not interested by the idea. That does not surprise us in the slightest. They were just clearly tabloid reports. But in the end, Zidane to United could have been the one thing that maybe could have kept Pogba at Old Trafford. Not anymore. There's no way at all that Pogba stays beyond this season, I would say. But again, let's see what happens with Mourinho first before we commit to anything forward there. You did mention PSG that could be a potential option. Yeah, potentially it could, but they would obviously need to move some key figures in order to facilitate that. But the Thiago Silva, of course, the defender there you mentioned, has expressed an interest in coaching post-career, which is an interesting option.
Normally, when you start to get towards the end of your tenure, I think he's, what, 36, 37? So he's nearing the end of his best days as a footballer. He is still very much a top defender in France and in world football. But he has been suggesting now that he needs to start thinking about his future beyond wearing the PSG colours. And he has now touted himself as wanting to go and get the required and necessary licenses in order to actually become a high-level coach. It's very interesting at the moment. We obviously have discussed what Thomas Tuchel, the PSG coach, has been able to do in sort of revolutionising the side and getting them to play probably their best ever football. And let's be honest, they are playing some of the absolute exquisite football in world football at this stage. I just wonder, maybe say 4, 5, 6, 7 years' time, whether Thiago Silva, the Brazilian international, might sort of come into the fold and maybe take over the reins at Paris Saint-Germain.
Well, he's certainly played under some phenomenal tacticians, has Thiago Silva, so you can understand. You've seen some modern-day coaches who have played under some of the very best coaches and managers over the journey. You can understand why Thiago Silva is very keen to follow suit there. 34 years of age, so he'll be very upset with that 37 reference.
My apologies, Thiago.
Certainly, you're right. Nearing the end and assessing his options going forward. But that's Thiago Silva there. Look, lots of football to come later this week. Of course, it's international break, so there's a whole host of friendlies to come a little later in the week. Some games, well, the opening game, Italy against Ukraine. Italy dealing with a major injury crisis at the moment, which we'll touch on in the next hour. And then, of course, UEFA Nations League returns later this week as well. Some thrilling fixtures. This wonderful new concept returns. Poland and Portugal in League A. Portugal, who it's been confirmed Ronaldo will miss 2018, so won't play the UEFA Nations League, the inaugural edition of this tournament. They win against Poland, and they're all but through into the finals. And mathematically, they will still need another point. But should they win against Poland, they could be the first team on the verge of qualification to the finals, which is great without their talisman up top.
Well, they're in the box seat.
Absolutely.
And that's the best way to put it. They are ready to go. I mean, France is probably the only other one that is more or less, in my eyes, ready to qualify for the next stage. But they are definitely ready to go and ready to make the next round.
Thrilling fixtures to have now. Again, we've discussed previously, these would have just been international friendlies for nothing. Players not really interested, but all of a sudden, you know, in League B, we have Russia taking on Sweden, the Sweden side desperately needing to win after losing to Turkey by 3-2 at home. Russia and Sweden, of course, two of the fairy tale stories of the World Cup.
Could have been the semi-final of the World Cup, both in the same half of the draw.
What a meeting here. Of course, Turkey, the other side in the group, who will actually meet Russia in Russia as well a few days later. So phenomenal set of circumstances here that these nations really need to participate and perform at a very high level, again, with promotion and relegation on the line in all groups. It's a really, really exciting concept. So looking forward to previewing that. And, of course, again, the beauty of the competition, what I like, is the fact that the lower-ranked nations get to play one another to actually develop.
Absolutely.
Not just go out there and lose 6-7-0. They can play, they can win, and they can compete amongst the best. But certainly some heavyweight fixtures to look forward to in League A this week.
Yeah, I actually can't wait to see what does happen between a few of these big, big teams. Really can't wait.
Plenty of football to come. We'll have you covered with previews of those later on in the week. Of course, if you are with us in Australia, all the UEFA Nations League action live and available on Optus Sport. But more on that to come. Let's do the rounds now in club football. Again, plenty more to come in the second hour, so stay tuned, footballnationradio.com or our Football Nation Radio app. But let's talk some coaching talk. We've obviously discussed Lopetegui and the uncertainty surrounding his future there. Again, that Cadena said radio yesterday saying that Lopetegui was potentially on the way out. Perez has made up his mind. Executives have then convinced him, give him a few more games till the end of the month. But Bayern Munich is the other interesting one. Now, this is very interesting because they find themselves in a very strange position. Bayern Munich well and truly outside the top four, which...
They're sixth at the moment.
Sixth, which we don't see. They've struggled for results. They've struggled for consistency there without a winning four in all competitions, two defeats in a row in the league, 1-1 in the Champions League against Ajax. They failed to score in their last two league games. It's all going wrong.
And they've conceded five. That's the other thing.
It is all going wrong for Bayern Munich. An ever-growing injury list, key players out of form, reported clashes between the manager and star players in their sixth, 4 points behind Borussia Dortmund, of course, a team that haven't won a title for seven seasons. All going wrong, new manager Kovac in place. Of course, last season, yes, they dominated, but they started poorly. And then last season, a few managerial changes as well. Of course, Carlo Ancelotti sacked around this time as well. So I suppose similar to last season, but it just feels that there isn't much to work with this time around. Now, very similar side, but a few aging stars. Those clashes, as I said. But again, what we questioned at the start of the campaign was, well, what's the motivation here for Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga? They've struggled to, well, not dominate seasons, because that they've done, but in the back end of seasons, they've wrapped up the title early. They've always struggled to maintain that level of form in the back end of a Champions League season. That's why we haven't seen them succeed in Europe since their last win in 2013. Where are they at now with reports that there are a short list of managers, according to strong German reports, really credible German reports, three managers being linked as a replacement for Kovac already, despite some support shown for him from the club. Those short list of names, according to these really credible reports in Germany, Laurent Blanc, Zinedine Zidane, and Arsene Wenger.
Well, I'm going to exclude the last two. They're definitely not going to go. I can't see that. Laurent Blanc would be an interesting one, the former France international, the former Bordeaux coach. He actually did coach against Bayern Munich many, many, many Champions League campaigns ago. I think it was 2008, 2009, if I'm not mistaken, but it was a very, very long time ago. He has been in the wilderness over the last couple of years. He hasn't been around too much, if you really think about it. So he'd be an interesting prospect to get in, considering that Bayern Munich have always had a very strong French connection. Obviously, Franck Ribéry, Corentin Torriso are the two that sort of spring to mind at this stage if you think about who they have as French players. I don't buy into the whole Nico Kovac scenario at this stage. I think they are very similar to what Real Madrid are going through. They do have a very, very hefty and very long list of injured players. Yes, they do lack a lot of creativity up forward. Leon Goretzka, Thomas Müller in particular, they're not up to it at the moment. Robert Lewandowski is not getting the supply that he has generally gotten. Serge Gnabry, James Rodriguez, yes, there is a little bit of infighting between Kovac and Rodriguez, we are all led to believe. But something up top just isn't quite working. And it doesn't mean that all of a sudden we throw the baby out with the bathwater here. You can't sack Nico Kovac on the back of pretty much 10 matches, in my eyes.
What's the difference then between Kovac and Lopetegui?
Well, the difference, well, I don't think there is much of a difference. And this is why I don't think that Florentino Perez will be the one to move him on this quickly. Perez, yes, we understand only Zidane has been the only coach to basically resign from his position, not be sacked. But I think with Bayern Munich, Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge in particular, they've always been about, let's build a project. Let's give a coach plenty of time to insert and assert their way of playing football. At Real Madrid, you don't have that time. No. It's, we need the results immediately from the get-go. Whereas with Bayern Munich, as we saw with Carlo Ancelotti, as we saw with Hupp Heynckes the first and the second time, they were all given time to bring in the players they felt could actually improve the club. They were given the backing to actually get the team and the structure in place and right, and then the results came from that. Okay. So I think there is a little bit of a difference.
Sure. Well, look, the Bayern president as well, Uli Hoeneß, has come out and actually supported Kovac. He said that he'll back him to the end, was the quote. But again, a few days ago as well, he also came out and said that there's been a lot of rotation in the squad. And ever since, there's something a bit wrong with us, but I don't think it's dramatic. So he has acknowledged the fact that maybe things aren't going as he'd like, but he did say it's up to the coach in the end. He's putting his neck on the line for it. At the moment, we have some problems, but that's normal.
Correct.
So maybe a bit more of a composed approach. And I don't think that they'll pull the trigger so soon. So I think that's the difference between the two clubs, Real and Bayern Munich. Certainly Lopetegui under more of a threat in the interim than, of course, his opposite number in Kovac. But again, repeating those credible German reports suggesting that Laurent Blanc, Zinedine Zidane and Arsene Wenger make up a three-man shortlist to potentially replace the
Who would you think out of those three should all of a sudden we see...
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I think Blanc makes the most sense because, and only because, I can't see Zinedine Zidane or Arsene Wenger coaching Bayern Munich. But then again, Arsene Wenger would be an interesting one. Does Arsene Wenger have one more top club left in him? Maybe. Arsenal had a wonderful rivalry against Bayern Munich, which was strongly in favour of Bayern Munich. So I'm sure Bayern is a club which Wenger respects very, very highly indeed. I think that Laurent Blanc would be the most likely of the three. Whether or not he's the best suited, I just don't think Zinedine Zidane would ever happen to Bayern Munich. I think they'd maybe...
Not at this stage, no.
Well, I think they'd even be more appeal in Manchester United than they would in Bayern Munich. And I was very much opposed to the United one. So it'd be contradictory of me to say that Zidane to Munich would make sense. I don't think that makes any sense. Arsene Wenger, certainly I think he has something to offer still. But what I do think about Arsene Wenger, I think that he would require a squad that was ready to go and ready to win at this later stage of his career. Laurent Blanc, certainly the one that makes the most sense there. But who knows? If and when this were to take place, who knows who's available and what the situation is. But Bayern Munich is a tough, tough one. Again, we speak about Real Madrid earlier. They say that Antonio Conte is the best available coach without a job. Antonio Conte to Bayern Munich would make no sense for me as well. The German Bundesliga, I don't know if it's culturally, I don't know if it's the rigors of the Bundesliga, whatever the case is, but not all these top managers, I feel, would be likened to the style of play in the Bundesliga. In actual fact, I was very surprised when Guardiola made the move from Barcelona to Bayern Munich, of course, now with Manchester City. So it's hard for me to say, but I would pick Blanc out of those three to be the most likely of the three to make a move there. But Bayern Munich, pressure is on, and the pressure is on, but I think that's a good thing for the German Bundesliga. Again, repeating, they're sixth in the league. They had a perfect 4-4 start, a draw and two defeats in their last three outings, as well as that draw in the Champions League against Ajax as well. And, well, maybe not as rosy as the start of the season as they would have hoped. But after the international break, it does not get any easier, Rick. Four trips on the road in 10 days. Can you believe it? They have Wolfsburg in the league, Ajax in the Champions League, Mainz in the Champions League, and then a road trip in the German Cup against a third-tier opponent. So four big trips to come, including that trip to Greece. So, look, doesn't get any easier for Kovac, but we'll get a fair indication as to where they're at mid-November when they play match day four at home against Ajax Athens, and then a few days later go to Borussia Dortmund to take on their rivals there in what could be, well, maybe an early title decider for the two giants of German football. But interesting developments at Bayern Munich. But again, don't panic if you're a Bayern Munich fan, because very similar scenes as to what was taking place at this time last season. Now, another manager, talking about assessing where we're at this point of the season, another manager who's been making headlines for more positive reasons than not in his time with Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp, a manager who, of course, came from Borussia Dortmund and the German Bundesliga, a manager highly regarded in world football, but some pressure starting to mount on this individual because, obviously, Liverpool are in a season now where, well, it's time for them to start delivering and winning some silverware, and that they have not done under Jurgen Klopp. Zero trophies in his time with the club, 166 games, 88 wins, 340 goals scored. Looks all well and good on paper, but no trophies.
Not yet.
Not yet. Liverpool are at a position where they need to start delivering. Klopp does appear to be the man. He's taken them back from a fifth or sixth side in England back to the top of England. But when will the trophies come? And how much longer does this Liverpool side continue? Not suggesting that they're going to move or part ways, because he's one of the world's best. He's already brought them back to where they once were, and now it's about that next step. But I think the pressure will start to mount on Klopp if he doesn't deliver this season something. And what we've seen so far, I'm confident that they can break that drought. But at the same time, just those last four games, the doubleheader against Chelsea, the very fortunate draw against Manchester City, and of course that narrow defeat to Napoli, maybe they're still just not there just yet.
Well, they're not just there yet, but we're assessing Jurgen Klopp's season at the start of October when the trophies are all determined in May.
Well, that's all we can deal with at the moment, Rick.
Well, at the moment, if we look at it, he's undefeated in the league.
He's undefeated, but how's he gone against the top sides?
Well, okay, if you think about it.
Zero wins.
But, as we've said before, the league isn't just won by defeating your rivals in the very top.
It's actually very important, though.
It's very important, but it's not only one there. You need to pick up points across the board against everybody. Yes, you do, and he has dropped points against, as we sort of touched on, Chelsea and Manchester City, but the title, the English Premier League title, isn't just determined playing those two teams. So I think you have to give him time to keep on growing. What he is doing is he's building a team for many, many years to have a very big stint at success. And he's done that, in my eyes, both defensively and in attack. We know about what he's done in attack with the players that he has, and we understand that things have sort of gone a little bit off skew with Salah and sort of being fanned out a little bit. But for me, it's defence. That Liverpool defence, I think, will be the reason why Liverpool will lift a piece of trophy and a piece of silverware at the end of the season. Alisson, yes, we've touched on him before. But no Dejan Lovren, which has meant Joe Gomez has come into this team. And what has he done with Virgil van Dijk? They haven't conceded many goals at home. If anything, I don't think they've conceded in their last 10, if you actually go through the record book. So all of a sudden, he sorted them out defensively. And that is what, in my eyes, wins you a title. It's your defence. You get that right, you go a very long way to claiming it.
Yeah, of course, certainly some massive improvements. Their road form against the lower opponents, where they're just banking the wins, something they weren't doing prior to Klopp's arrival. I've got no doubt that they've improved, but certainly I think if they don't win silverware this season, we're not writing them off. Clearly, they're equal top with City and Chelsea in the league, and they've had a solid start to the Champions League.
I can't write them off. No, I tipped them. I tipped them to win the title.
Of course. Look, I just feel, given how competitive the Premier League will be this season, with legitimately those three sides all well and truly in the mix, every point counts, obviously. And I'm just questioning, if he goes through another season here at Liverpool without any silverware, well, then what? Because, again, there are always top-class managers available. Klopp is one of the top-class managers in world football. But certainly it's going to come to a point now where these big clubs are going to be demanding big trophies. And Liverpool, again, are a big club in world football. And it's been a wonderful journey under Jurgen Klopp. And I do hope for his sake that they can deliver something of some note this season. Of course, so close to that Champions League crown in Kiev just a few months ago. And we do forget that. That was only a few months ago. He could have very easily had a Champions League crown to his name, and we would certainly not be having this conversation.
And if we remember how well Liverpool started in those opening 20 minutes, even half an hour, where they just bombarded
the team by far.
That goal mouth of Keylor Navas, it could have been a different story.
By far. Look, a really, really exciting period for Liverpool, nevertheless. So I think we're just picking holes there at a few things. But look, Klopp, he's got them on the right track. Really impressive to watch. Jim's just come through here on the Facebook Live as we're near the end of our first hour here on our first birthday at FNR Football Nation Radio. Happy birthday. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Well done to everyone on this whole concept. It's no coincidence so much is happening in Australia regarding governance, expansion, NPL, etc. when initiatives like this are here. Keep going. This is vitally important and most appreciated. Thank you very much, Jim. We do appreciate your kind words and, of course, all of your support, as we do all of our loyal sponsors and fans here in Australia and, of course, around the world as well. It's been wonderful bringing you all of this. Do stay tuned, because we have a full hour coming up in the second hour, and we'd love to hear from some of you, our fans here. Just give us a call. We're on 9944999, or just get in touch with us on Twitter at FNR_radio. We'd love to get you on the line and allow you to share your thoughts of things that are making headlines in football. Of course, in the second hour, we'll recap those Ballon d'Or nominees, are not finalists just yet, but the 30 men's, the 15 women's, and the 10 young boy awards. We'll bring you all those again, give you our thoughts on who will win in January. Of course, the Ballon d'Or for the best player in the world this year. This is the real,
yes,
the real thing.
The real McCoy.
We'll start to look ahead to what's to come in the international world of football. We'll recap all those big talking points with the managerial potential switches, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich amongst those. Some transfer stories to bring to your attention as well. And also some comments made by the owner of Valladolid, Ronaldo. Phenomenal. He's very happy with how his side are performing in the Spanish La Liga. Plenty of news stories as well doing the rounds. And we'll also bring you some big injury news coming from some top clubs across European football. But we'll leave the first hour, Rick, there for now. It's gone very quickly, as always. And again, a massive thank you to everyone who supported us over the last 12 months. We look forward to the next 12 months and the 12 months to follow from there and all the years to come, delivering you all the football news and analysis, of course, around the world, but also, and more importantly, even here closer to home in Australia. So a big thank you once again to all our fans and our sponsors over the last 12 months. Look forward to the next 12 months. But for now, we'll get to a quick break, but plenty more still to come right here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello there and welcome to the second hour of Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. We are your voice of football in Australia and around the world. And we have been doing that for exactly 1 year today as we celebrate our first birthday here at FNR. Again, a massive thank you to all our loyal fans and sponsors who have made this journey possible. We've certainly enjoyed being your home for all things football here in Australia and right around the world. A busy hour ahead. We'll be recapping all of the nominees for the Ballon d'Or Awards. 30 male players shortlisted for that award, 15 female players for the female edition, and of course, 10 young players there. Plenty of news doing the rounds in Europe as well, on ahead of course, the international break. The second international break of the season, some big fixtures in the UEFA Nations League to come later this week, some top managers under pressure, and we'll bring you some of the latest transfer stories as well with a key defender linked to Manchester United, a former Italian legend back in action playing in the lower levels of Italian football, and a big development on the future of Paul Pogba. So that and plenty more to come in the next hour. We are, of course, our lines are open. You know that, 9944999. We are, of course, taking your calls at FNR underscore radio is where you can find us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you there as well. Again, as we celebrate our first birthday, Rick, the news headlines to celebrate our first birthday, and then we'll get into, again, our thoughts and analysis of those shortlists for the 2018 Ballon d'Or Awards.
Thank you very much, Adrian. And as you sort of touched on just there, the men's and women's Ballon d'Or nominees have been revealed overnight by Establishment France Football. The magazine has awarded 30 nominees in the men's category, while the women's award, held for the first time, has 15. The Copper Trophy nominations, which will be given to the best male player under the age of 21, were also revealed. According to multiple reports out of Spain, it seems as if Real Madrid coach Julen Lopetegui will be given until the Clásico against Barcelona to turn the team's fortunes around. Los Blancos have failed to win a match since defeating Espanyol 3 weeks ago and not scored a goal in their last four outings across all competitions. Arsenal have revealed the club has signed a £300 million 5-year shirt sponsorship deal with Adidas from the 2019-2020 season. Currently, the Gunners are sponsored by Puma. Staying in England, the England FA will investigate comments made by Manchester United coach Jose Mourinho at the conclusion of their match against Newcastle. Cameras caught the tactician muttering profanities in his native language. And finally, Paris Saint-Germain defender Thiago Silva has revealed he wishes to become a coach once his playing career at PSG is over. Adrian, that's the news in a nutshell. Back to you.
Great nutshell, great news. Lots of talking points to come. Again, 9944999, our number. Give us a call
We would absolutely love to hear from you again on this special occasion for us. Birthday number one here at FNR Football Nation Radio. But let's get into those Ballon d'Or shortlists, Rick. We'd love to know what you think about these as well at FNR underscore radio. But let's go through the men's first. We discussed in the first hour some of the surprise inclusions, cutting Benzema, Isco. But Benzema, certainly the most of them all. 12 goals, 47 games. How do you make the best 30 players on the planet? I have no idea.
No clue whatsoever on this one.
You won a Champions League. That's it. So did other players, and other players won more.
He's French.
He's French. That makes sense. Well, that's working in his favour.
But that's it. There's not much else that actually is going in favour of the man that's who right. was exiled from the French national team.
His country won the World Cup. He wasn't there.
There's really nothing going for him where we are really, really, really surprised, Adrian and I, that Karim Benzema, the Real Madrid striker, is in this outline, in this 30-man nomination.
Let's look seriously at who could win this thing. Okay. 30 players shortlisted. We are in full agreement. There are only five potential finalists. Now, it's incredible to think that Mohamed Salah was a favourite to win this, and now he's not even in our five. Our five are as follows. Luka Modric, of course, after what he did at the World Cup with Croatia. Antoine Griezmann, of course, after what he did at the World Cup with France. And his teammates at international level, Rafa Varane, who also did wonderful things at club level with Real Madrid. And then, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. They're our five. Varane is the smoky to go all the way and win this thing. Champions League with Real Madrid, World Cup with France, the only player in the last 12 months to do that. Antoine Griezmann, of course, Europa League, Luka Modric, Golden Ball, and Ronaldo and Messi. Well, they're Ronaldo and Messi, but Varane could seriously win this thing.
He actually could win this thing. There always has been a perpetuity to lean towards a French-speaking player in getting this award. It has happened on many an occasion. It really, really would not surprise me if the current Real Madrid defender who partners Sergio Ramos in defence could lift this thing come early next year.
Of course, it really won't surprise me. Would become the first defender since Cannavaro in 06 after Italy won the World Cup, and Juventus won some things as well, which were then eventually taken off them. But regardless, Varane, it does make sense for him to win, but of course he'd have to get past his club teammate and Luka Modric, who won all there was to win almost with the World Cup. He just missed out. Very, very close. But that golden ball is the thing that Modric can hang his hat on off the back of being the best player at the World Cup finals.
Yeah, you can't really dispute that. You win the golden ball in the pinnacle FIFA tournament, you have to be, in my eyes, the favourite to claim this title. Yeah.
And he's won the Champions League as that well. Also adds, and he was brilliant in the Champions League.
But as you can sort of tell from the 30 nominations, it's very much World Cup slanted. Mm. There's very much this strong angle to players who have done very well at the Russian edition to actually being in this final short list.
You are right. You are right. So what does that say then about Modric and Varane?
So for me, I think that five absolutely has to be there, but if you really think about it, it really gets narrowed down even further. Mm. And I think three of the five, excluding Messi, Ronaldo, are very much in contention to claim this title here.
Very interesting. Okay, so maybe a final three of Modric, Varane and Griezmann.
And this starts to make it a little bit more sense when you look into the comments made by the Atletico Madrid striker Griezmann himself, where he has suggested that it'd be a shame if a Frenchman didn't win this award on the back of what has happened.
That's the interesting element as well, of course. Antoine Griezmann coming out and saying that, and this is a quote. So Antoine Griezmann has said, whatever happens, a Frenchman must win this Ballon d'Or, which for us, it leaves two, himself or Rafa Varane. Varane is in with a chance. It would be an incredible win if he were to win it. But Griezmann, of course, has a reason why as well. Stunning World Cups by all the French players involved. Of course, N'Golo Kanté and Kylian Mbappé in there as well. But tough to say who will win, but we will be a little clearer in coming months. Just on Cristiano Ronaldo, now, of course, the Ballon d'Or is the award given for the calendar year, which means we're still going. If something monumental were to happen now, albeit it can't, because there's nothing to play for. But there obviously still is some stuff to play for. Now, Ronaldo, his statistics in Italy have been well documented, given the amount of shots he's had for few goals in return. The latest statistics now, with two ahead of the second international break, he has had the most shots and most shots on goal in Italy by a long, long, long distance. In fact, in recent weeks, just comparatively in the Serie A, he's had 15 more shots than any other player. 47 shots to second place Lorenzo Insigne, 32 shots, 27 of his shots on target. He has been as active a player as we've seen. Obviously, the goals are now starting to come. But my question, how much of an impact has this early season form? And now, while the goals haven't been going in at the same rate, he's still managing to get some goals. How much of an impact, if any, does his form at Juventus have for this Ballon d'Or award?
Well, it has to have some sort of impact because the Ballon d'Or is calendar year. And that's the difference, is you have to exclude what he did in the first half of his Real Madrid tenure last season. And we all know what happened. Basically, Ronaldo turned up after the Club World Cup. So, yes, you have to include what he has done and his four goals and his four assists for the Bianconeri this tenure. It all adds into the pot, into the mix, in actually determining if he makes the final five, if he makes the short list of final three, and if he has a realistic chance of lifting another Ballon d'Or.
I really think he'll make the final five. He still has to be considered as a potential winner of the award. But again, your comment made about it being a bit World Cup skewed, surely Ronaldo and Messi then can't win it.
Well, Ronaldo could because he did score four goals at the World Cup. You remember three against Spain, one against Iran. Against Iran, if I'm not mistaken, yes. So all of a sudden he is in contention. He was leading the goal scoring charts pretty much up until Romelu Lukaku decided to tear apart England, Panama and Tunisia. So very much in contention, yes. Very much.
In contention and certainly a top five finalist for us. It will be very interesting, of course. No Bayern Munich player included, the first time since 1997, and a couple of other notable figures left out. But in the end, I think it's clear who will be there or thereabouts for the final shortlist.
But which Bayern Munich would you have included? Kimmich? Or Lewandowski?
Lewandowski I would have included. Kimmich was also the German player of the year last year. Look, it's just hard. It's surprising that a club that have dominated domestically in Germany and a club in Bayern Munich who have always been consistent in Europe without winning too much in recent seasons. It's just strange not to see a German player there because they have been the best nation historically, and for them not to have a single representative, there isn't a German player in that squad.
No.
That is strange. They came into the World Cup as favourites to win the World Cup, and this is further proof in what you've just said that it is very World Cup skewed because Germany were the favourites to win the World Cup, and they didn't do that. They failed, and as a result, no nominee in the final 30.
Even more stranger, how did Toni Kroos miss out? How did Isco make it when Toni Kroos is the central midfielder?
I was just trying to think of who was the key German who could have been there. Toni Kroos. Well, there you go. That's proof in the pudding that they are World Cup skewed here. And Kroos, who was sensational for them. Also Casemiro as well for Brazil.
You know what? You may as well just put the whole Real Madrid starting 11 from the Champions League final.
We see UEFA, the UEFA team of the year last season. They were entire Real Madrid side because they dominated the Champions League. It makes complete sense. In this case, the Ballon d'Or award is clearly in favour of the World Cup. Hence, having said that, how did Karim Benzema get back in there? I don't want to reopen that one, but that makes no sense whatsoever. And even Gareth Bale, how did Wales go at the World Cup?
Well, yeah, true.
Well, so where has that come from? So that doesn't appear to be consistent for me because I would have thought that Toni Kroos and certainly Casemiro, who Brazil had a slightly better World Cup than Germany, I would have thought they could have got in over Gareth Bale, whose Wales didn't do anything at the World Cup.
Well,
obvious reasons.
If you add further weight to all this, with all the goalkeepers that are in here, Alisson, Courtois, obviously, you've got Oblak as well and Lloris. How did Navas not make it? Navas has the success other than what Lloris has had, and maybe you could argue with Oblak. How did Navas not make it?
World Cup. That makes no sense.
Half his teammates at club level did.
You're right. If Alisson has made it as a goalkeeper playing for Roma in a semi-final and Brazil over Keylor Navas, who won the Champions League with Real Madrid and obviously was at the World Cup group stage with Costa Rica. That makes no sense whatsoever, given the fact that, of course, Casemiro and Toni Kroos have been left out of
When you also factor in Oblak only won a Europa League, his nation, Slovenia, didn't make the World Cup. Courtois, we know what we've said about him. His team was nowhere at club level, and all of a sudden here he makes it because he won an Adidas Golden Glove Award at the World Cup, and that's controversial in both our eyes nonetheless. Hugo Lloris. Well, what did Tottenham really do? They made a top four in the English Premier League, got bundled out of the round of 16 of the Champions League. Yes, he did lead his nation to a FIFA World Cup. So it just really solidifies the argument. This Ballon d'Or is very much World Cup skewed.
Well, yeah. We actually missed one Frenchman before. Six Frenchmen in this list. Pogba, Mbappe, Kante, Lloris, Griezmann and Varane. Griezmann and Varane, the top two for us there. But in the end, it is. You're right. It's very World Cup skewed. Of course, some of the other finalists, there's Marcelo. Again, Marcelo there, but Casemiro, Toni Kroos not. I don't know how that makes any sense. De Bruyne, Firmino, of course, did well, both club and country. Well, didn't really do well for country because had limited opportunities for Brazil at the World Cup. Neymar's in there, of course. Harry Kane had a solid World Cup. Well, yes, solid
yes,
World Cup.
Yes.
Cavani, Suarez, Uruguayan, Giro, of course, Mohamed Salah. So, look, it's a talented list. Mandzukic in there, Sadio Mane, but not a list for me that has enough consistency in it because the omissions are very, very intriguing. Nevertheless, again, our final five, Ronaldo, Messi, Varane, Griezmann, and the likely winner, Luka Modric. Let's get to the women's award. Does Marta win again? She's just won the FIFA Best Awards. This is now the female Ballon d'Or award. She's one of the 15 finalists alongside some other players who were in the mix for other awards but didn't win because Marta won. But amongst them, Ergeberg, the Lyon striker, Marozan, your favourite, the yep. German national team captain and Lyon player as well.
Yep.
Sam Kerr from Australia, Megan Rapinoe from the United States. There's some very talented players in this list. Marta, though, off the back of the FIFA Best Awards, is she favourite to win this one?
I don't think she's favourite in my eyes. I mean, what Orlando Pride did, they didn't do too well. Yes, you can mount the argument for Brazil with the Copa America Femenil, where Marta basically captained the team to victory. But she had, what, one goal out of 30 that they scored? Or something to that effect. I think it was 31 in the end. So I can't really see how Marta gets this award. Yes, she did win the FIFA Best Award, but I don't think France Football and UEFA would correlate. FIFA would correlate this closely on winning the award. I still think it is going to be Marozan getting your team through to the World Cup in such fashion and leading Lyon to a double, both domestically and on the continent. I think gives her a little bit of a skew ahead of your favourite in Ergeberg.
Yeah, I think she will win, but it will be very intriguing for the finalists, the 15 women nominated for the Ballon d'Or. And just for the Copa Trophy, the Young Boy Award, one winner and one winner only, surely.
It has to be only Kylian Mbappe. And this is why I don't think he will get the Ballon d'Or. Even though he is in the final 30, I think the ultimate, the judges and everybody who does vote in it will actually skew him to win the Copa Trophy and obviously one of the other people that we are suggesting to win the Ballon d'Or. But you really can't not give it to him.
Oh, he's at a different level.
He's at a different level. And we saw with the quadruple that he scored against Lyon, we've seen what he was able to do in the Champions League. We saw how he led France to the World Cup. He won the Golden Boy Award there. He won the treble with PSG. What more do you need to do not to be given this award?
Is this the award that will be voted on by Ronaldo and Messi?
It is.
Okay. Mbappe will, regardless of that, that's just another
that's
factor.
A side note.
But Mbappe will win this award handsomely and very easily. But some of the other finalists, of course, we mentioned, you're thinking that Pulisic and Trent Alexander-Arnold will be 2 and 3 at some level. Obviously, both players really, really excelling both at club level and, well, not so much for Pulisic at international level, but Alexander-Arnold at the World Cup, England. These two players are really at the top of their game at a very young age.
Yeah, I can't see, for instance, Gigi Donnarumma doing it. I think after what Milan did last season, that goes the same.
And no World Cup.
No World Cup. The same with Cutrone. Ua, he didn't make the France team, so I can't really see him doing it. Doan is probably a new name to me that sort of popped up. Rodrigo. Well, this isn't the one that plays for Valencia. This is the one that plays in Brazil, who's 16, 17 years old, so he's very, very young. I can't see him doing it. Justin Kluivert, well, the Eredivisie is regarded as sort of one tier lower than the big five, so I can't see the former son of Patrick, or currently the son, but the former, you know what I mean anyway, the former Barcelona and Ajax player. I can't see him getting, even though he had 10 goals and 4 assists.
Well, as we said with him, he's only just made the move now to Roma, so let him, one more season for him at
one
a higher level,
seasons,
then
yeah.
He could maybe challenge for this award.
Pulisic was the only one. He did have a very strong campaign, especially that first half of the season where he was linked to half of the world's football for the best part of three figures with a pound sign in front of him. So my three has to be Mbappe, Pulisic and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Mm. You don't make a World Cup, you don't make a Champions League final and not be regarded in the top three in the final three.
And, of course, the other finalist, Amadou Aidara, who's a Mali international, plays for Red Bull Salzburg. He's a midfielder there, 20 years of age. It's Mbappe, certainly, he wins. It's not even his to lose. He just wins the award. There's no doubt
about
it.
And he's French.
And he's French. There's no doubt about it that he wins. That would be the most certain thing I've ever seen ever in anything. So Mbappe wins deservedly, but some good young faces there coming through the ranks. I suppose it is a good thing for Italian football. It would be the first time in a very long time that two young Italians were both shortlisted for a Young Boy Trophy Award of this note. So Cutrone and Donnarumma there, the young pairing from AC Milan, certainly giving them some hopes, both club and country, for the future.
But I think there's also going to be a little bit of hope with Patrick Kluivert's international teammates, Matthias De Ligt and Frankie De Jong.
Mm.
You'll see them in the future, probably from next year. They will make
one of these lists. Well, De Ligt is the captain of Ajax at the moment.
Correct.
19 years of age and plenty of talent there. You feel that the Dutch, who are in a very similar position to the Italians at the moment, both missing the World Cup, both powerhouse nations who have just fallen away, but the Dutch certainly with some bright prospects coming through, and I suppose the Italians as well in the fact that they have that couple there, as we said. But they are the nominees for the Men's Player of the Year, the Ballon d'Or, of course, the Women's Player of the Year there, and the Coppa Trophy for the Young Boy Award. But again, recapping our favourites, for me, for the female is Ergeberg, for Rick it's Marazan, for the Young Boy there's one and one only, Kylian Mbappe, and our five finalists for the Ballon d'Or Award this year, Ronaldo, Messi, Varane, Griezmann and Luka Modric. On that note, we're off to a break. Plenty more still to come. Stay tuned. This is Afternoons, and you are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio on a very, very special day, Rick, for FNR Football Nation Radio. Of course, celebrating our one-year anniversary, our first birthday here, where we, of course, thank you all of our listeners, all of our loyal sponsors for all of their support over the last 12 months. We've thoroughly enjoyed being your voice of football here in Australia and right around the world, and we look forward to the many years and many birthdays to come in future. And Rick, it's timely because it's a very busy day with these Ballon d'Or shortlists announced. We've brought you all those in depth in our first hour, and obviously to kickstart this second hour, we'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts about that or any of the coaching dilemmas that we're about to bring to your attention. You can give us a call at any stage on 9944999 or reach us on Twitter at @FNR_radio. Let's get to those two big clubs who have a few coaching issues at the moment, given the recent reports, very credible reports, that surround the futures of the managers of Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, two of the biggest clubs in European football. In the case of Los Blancos, the most successful club in the history of the European Cup / UEFA Champions League. But as it stands, the future of Lopetegui, the former Spain coach, now the coach of Real Madrid, is up in the air. And in actual fact, overnight, there were reports by Radio Cadena said in Spain, suggesting that Lopetegui was set to be sacked last night, Rick, by Florentino Perez, until some executives at Real Madrid stepped in and convinced the president to hold off for a few more weeks. So it's getting close as the pressure continues to mount on the fourth-placed Real Madrid.
You feel sorry a little bit for Julen Lopetegui. If you remember back to the World Cup, prior to him actually being sacked by Luis Rubiales, the Spanish FA president, there was a meeting with the FA. There was a meeting with a few players. Obviously, we replace Rubiales with Perez, and it's got a very, very similar feel about it, doesn't it? If you think about it, the players obviously enjoy playing with or under Julen Lopetegui. It's obviously the results, in the case of Real Madrid, in the case of the Spanish FA, the deal that he had mustered with Los Blancos that ultimately cost him his role and his job.
Let me put a hypothetical to you. If he is to be sacked by Real Madrid, what happens and where does he go? Because it's been a messy, messy 3 months. Obviously, what you just said with Spain. Well, 4 months, June, July, August, September. So the last 4 months, now we're into October. It's been a terrible period for an individual who, yes, has achieved his dream move to Real Madrid, clearly as anyone would, but it came at a cost. And it came at a cost for Spain as well, because I still think they could have won that World Cup. I really believe they could have won that World Cup. I still don't think... I don't want to reopen this,
no,
but I still
let's
don't
open
think,
up this wound
I
again.
Still
Come on.
Don't think Le Bleu were the best World Cup winner I've ever seen. I think Spain were the best team there in Russia, and certainly what happened before the World Cup affected them. So he could have won a World Cup. He didn't. He stomached that, moved to Real Madrid, was very emotional when he was unveiled as the Real Madrid boss. Fast forward 3.5 months, and he's on the verge of the sack. If he's to be sacked from here, what happens next? What can happen next for Lopetegui?
The big question is, where does he go? I mean, there's no real outlet for a club to want him anymore. He's basically, you could argue, he's taken the dollars when he was Spain coach and gone to Real Madrid. He's obviously gone and looked at his future a little bit more beyond those 4 weeks of the Russian tournament. If that falls in a heap, well, you're right. Where to? There's no real impetus to actually hire him again. He had, you know, was it 3 years? Or sorry, 2 years under, you know, the Spanish national team system. So he's already done the national team coach setup, and he obviously craved club football.
Mm.
There aren't many positions out there, as we've touched on, in world football that require a coach. And frankly, if you step down from Real Madrid, where do you really go? There's no real place to go.
Again, hypothetically, can you even guess one? Because I can't even actually think of a suitable fit for a manager who will clearly want to maintain that level. We're not saying, okay, maybe you can go and coach whoever in La Liga. Who could he coach at the highest level of football that would be a suitable fit and would actually want Lopetegui off the back of what? Sure, he excelled with Spain, but they played not much in the lead up to the World Cup. They did take care of Argentina very impressively, 6-1 in a friendly in March this year. But with exception to that, they took care of a very poor Italy side once in two fixtures in qualification, and that was about it. So a manager who, yes, has half-proved himself, but doesn't really have that much... There's not much of a sell for Lopetegui. I can't even guess a club that would be suitable just on paper before any discussions are actually had.
Well, if you run through all the teams that have coaching speculation already been discussed, could you see him at Bayern Munich?
No.
No, because Nikol Kovac is the fresh coach who's done the hard yards and has gotten his chance after what Jupp Heynckes and Carlo Ancelotti went through.
Manchester United?
Can you see him at Manchester United? No, because they've already got someone from the Iberian coast and they've already run through this problem, so I don't think they're going to go and get another one.
No.
Can you see him somewhere in Italy? Well, no, not really. So the only place he could probably coach...
Barcelona.
He's not going to go from one to the other. No. The hatred is
but
already
that's the thing.
There.
I've had the pressure mounting there as well, but no, I can't see that happening. Diego Simeone may leave Atleti at some point, but that won't be anytime soon. There just doesn't appear to be that fit for him now, and clearly a return to the national team fold is not an option. So he could be out of ideas here.
He could be sitting at home somewhere at the moment in Madrid, having a nice sangria, and he'd be enjoying life because that's all he'd be able to do.
That is true, but I'm sure that he wants to be coaching. So the next few weeks now for Real Madrid, pivotal, because if they don't get their act together, he will be shown the door, because reports are saying again that overnight he was very close to being shown the door, but executives at Real Madrid said to Florentino Perez, or suggested, just hold off, give him until the Clásico, which takes place at the end of this month. Their upcoming fixtures, Levante at home, the 20th of October. That's an afternoon kickoff. Victoria Pilsen in the Champions League. That is an absolute must win. And then the big one, Barcelona, the Nou Camp. It doesn't get any tougher than that.
No, it doesn't get any easier for him whatsoever. But it's, if you remember back to more or less this time last year, maybe even a little bit later on, Zinedine Zidane was actually going through this sort of crisis point.
He was gone.
He was gone. They were so far out of La Liga. The Copa del Rey was basically, well, it's the Mickey Mouse tournament of the Spanish teams. They don't really like to play for it. It pretty much gets given to either Bilbao or Barcelona every other year. So they're the only two that really do compete for it. But it was his Champions League basically staying in that tournament that saved Zidane. Could this be the same thing for Lopetegui, even though we argue, or I certainly do, that La Liga has to be Real Madrid's priority this season, not the Champions League?
I'll tell you what saved Zidane last season. It was the fact that they won the Club World Cup at a time when the chips were down. They were gone. Mm. Real Madrid were really gone. They were already 15 points behind Barcelona before the turn of the year in La Liga. And that was because, obviously, a few games in hand because of the Club World Cup. Now, Real will play in the Club World Cup again, and they will very likely win that Club World Cup again. If he can get there, then he finds himself in the identical situation to what Zidane was last season, because Zidane's issues came from now to the end of the year. Mm. It was the October to December period where they were horrible and he was at risk of being sacked. Keep in mind, you recall the group they had in the Champions League last season? They finished second in that group to who? To Tottenham. Now, Tottenham played some solid football, but they were in that group of death, Real Madrid, with Borussia Dortmund as well, who played very poor football under, well, their multiple managers last season.
Boschenstorger.
So Apoel were the other side in that group. Now, Real Madrid scraped through that group in second. Well, they got through comfortably in the end because Dortmund was so poor. But had it not been for that, Zidane would have been gone. Had Dortmund been the Dortmund of this season, Zidane would have been gone before the turn of the year. It wasn't the case. They scraped through the group. Now, I think that given Real's poor group, the fact they got the 3-0 over Roma, and the fact that they should take care of Pilsen home and away and CSKA Moscow in the return match at home, I think that will be enough to get Lopetegui to the end of the year, where then if he can claim the Club World Cup crown, it will then give him enough time for the round of 16 and whatever's beyond in the Champions League, and it will be there where his future will be determined. So, yes, I'm with you. I still think La Liga should be the focus, but I think his immediate success will be determined and his future will be determined by what happens in Europe. Yeah. And I still think they'll get through this group.
Yeah, well, if they get through the group, and they should top it. Roma, like you said,
they still should top it.
They should top it. The pressure will just ease. I think it's just...
But that's where he needs those little stepping stones to get to the points where he can justify why they should keep him. And I don't think that they should... Although it's the hardest job in world football, I don't think that they should fire him now because, again, well, who comes in? Antonio Conte has been linked. Santiago Solari, the Real Madrid B manager, has been linked. But, again, I suppose Zidane came in at short notice as well. But these short-term, short-minded approaches, Real Madrid, they could build something. It's a new era. It was always going to be a new era, whoever took charge. So I think they should stick with Lopetegui, but I think that what happens in the Champions League will ultimately determine his fate.
Yeah. Unfortunately, due to Real Madrid's pedigree and their history, it is what happens in that premier European competition that ultimately determines whether a coach stays or whether a coach goes.
The other one, big club, big problems, Bayern Munich. Uli Hoeneß, the president of Bayern, has come out and backed the manager, Niko Kovac, to the end, he says. However, conflicting reports in credible German sources suggesting that Laurent Blanc, Zinedine Zidane and Arsene Wenger are being tipped as potential replacements. They're the three men shortlisted. We discussed who would be the best fit. I think we both were in agreement that Laurent Blanc probably, just given the fact more so we can't see Zidane or Wenger coaching the Bavarians in the Bundesliga, and I'll stand by that. But even so, a club, a new manager, an ageing squad, it doesn't matter who you have there, no manager is going to come in and do much different to what Kovac is doing. And keep in mind, they started very well. Mm. They've slipped up in the last four games, but they started well. They've just fallen away slightly. But again, very similar start to last season.
Well, it almost mimics what they did last season. And then what happened? They changed coaches and they rocketed up the table. And then the discussion turned to, is the Bundesliga a fair and equitable a competition where you've basically got one runaway leader?
Do they bring Jupp Heynckes back?
I don't think they can play that card too often. As much as, you know, he has proved himself that he can come back on short notice, he did rule it out for the second time that was it. No more. I'm done as a coach. Mm. So I can't see, you know, Heynckes or Rummenigge saying all of a sudden, Hoyt, do you want to come back for another, you know, 8 months?
I don't think
can't so. Can't see it.
Well, Munich's sixth in the league. We rarely say that, but they are. They're struggling without a win in their last three in the league. And I said their fixtures earlier, but after the international break, four trips, 10 days, Wolfsburg, AEK Athens, Mainz, and then a trip away from home against the third division side in the German Cup.
But are we also reading a little bit too much into Bayern Munich and who they've lost to? Where are... Now, you've got it up in front of you. Mm. Where are Hertha Berlin and where are Borussia Mönchengladbach on the table?
Yeah, you're right. They are well and truly up there. In fact, Hertha are fifth, Mönchengladbach are third. But again, this is Bayern Munich. We're talking about the best of the best here. And Borussia Dortmund, to be fair, they've beaten sides who are, yes, all in the lower parts of the table. But they're there because Dortmund have put seven past Nuremberg. Mm. They've put lots of goals. They've put four past Augsburg. They've put four past Leverkusen. They've been putting lots of goals past these solid sides. So I take your point. They've played some of the best. And that's why I don't think that we should read too much into it. So I am in agreement there. But the failure in the Champions League against Ajax was the eye-opener for me. Because 1-1 with Ajax, in a match where Ajax, a young side, went to the Allianz there in Munich and controlled the game for parts. Bayern Munich had that formidable win record in the group stage of the Champions League where they hadn't lost
for like four seasons,
even longer, 2013. So that was the most alarming factor for me. Bayern Munich and the Champions League have always been so, so dominant, particularly at home, as the record states. And that failure was when the alarm bell started to ring.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Maybe we are just reading that little bit too much into the Bavarians.
We'll get to a break shortly. We'll wrap up the program with some news. But just a last one on Bayern, Real and these failures. We've discussed this earlier in the week, but what does this mean now for the Champions League this season? Because, again, Juventus and Paris Saint-Germain are the two sides with perfect win records. And Barcelona, look, they've been down a little, I suppose, in La Liga, but still, they still have that quality which has still been shown time and time again. And I'm sure they'll get their act together. But does this does their struggles in the early stages of the campaign, does it do anything to change your thoughts regarding whether or not they can compete in the latter stages of the Champions League this season?
Not particularly, no, because as we are all aware, you don't win the Champions League in October.
True.
You win it in May. You win it.
You do have to get through the group, though, Rick.
You do. Are you anticipating Bayern Munich getting or not getting out of that group?
Bayern Munich should get out of that group, but you can't.
Put your house on it. No, you're right.
Nor do we advise that.
No. We've done that previously, and yes, that has hurt us previously. But nonetheless, you would think that both Real Madrid and Bayern Munich should get through.
I agree.
It's when do these teams really start to turn up? They turn up in the knockout stages of the Champions League. Yes, they do it tough. Yes, they don't look pretty. Yes, they don't, you know, go by the textbooks and how they get there. But they get there, and then they go very deep. You can't make a semi-final of a Champions League year in, year out, and almost make it seem as if it's a norm unless you are super, super good. And that is what these two teams are. If you frame it, obviously, in the case of Juventus and PSG, then you say to yourself, okay, well, Juventus and PSG at the moment are looking like they're on another level, but let's see what they're like when they get to the knockout stages. And I think that is the approach that has to be taken going forward.
Interesting, and you are right. Very early days, but I do have doubts early on about Real. I don't think that Real will do what they did last season and turn it around under Zinedine Zidane, and I don't think Lopetegui will see the season out, but I do think he has a few short milestones to help extend his brief tenure with the club. But that and more to come in coming weeks. We're off to our final break for the day. Just some other news to wrap up the program. This is Afternoons, and you are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back for the final time today. This is Afternoons. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, and it is our first birthday, Rick.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Hope you've enjoyed the day. It's been a big year for us, a big year to come. Of course, it's been a big day. We've been talking about the Ballon d'Or nominees and the latest coaching sagas and rumours around European football. Just before we wrap up with some transfer news, Rick, we posted a video yesterday to social media regarding Zinedine Zidane's agent confirming that that proposed move to Manchester United was never, ever going to happen. I put out a tweet myself saying, is anyone surprised? And Dennis got back to me. He said, not at all. He'll be at Juventus next season with Pogba. Might have to wait for Mbappe in brackets with an exclamation mark, I think being a bit smart there. But he said, my view is that if Allegri wins the Champions League, Allegri will go out on a high. And if he doesn't win, he'll be moved on. Either way, Zidane will take over next season, probably a done deal, hence the year off. Believe it or not?
I believe some elements of it. I don't believe all of it. I don't think Allegri's aim this season, I've gone on record as saying this, I don't think his aim is to win the Champions League. I think it's still a two-year process. But
when we disagree on that.
We do disagree on that. We're not getting into that debate with only a few minutes to go on today's show. But I think in maybe 2 to 3 seasons' time, when the Allegri contract expires, I can't see it being renewed. Maybe with the few other pieces at Zidane and the few other comments that he is making, that's when I can see him possibly coming into the Italian club giants fold. Not yet.
Okay.
Give it a couple more years.
No, see, I do agree with that comment made there, because I think that the angle there that Dennis is coming from is that Allegri was close to leaving now. Marotta convinced him to stay. Marotta is now gone. I just think this is Allegri's last season. I really do. I'm not sure where he'll go. He is studying English, so maybe he goes somewhere else. But I think that this is a look at Juventus and their business model and what they've been doing recently. They've been very ruthless. And I think Agnelli with Zidane, it does make sense given where his head is at the moment. So don't be surprised. Again, win the Champions League, Allegri goes out a king. Fail to win the Champions League, Allegri just is moved on for the Champions League king. That's the way I feel this is being handled, but we will see. Plenty of time to go there. Elsewhere, some transfer stories to wrap up. Well, United, Juventus, they're in the news for Pogba, of course. But it's been confirmed now that Juve were never interested in Pogba. We're not going to think about it. We're not going to talk about it. Paratici's saying that this was never on the table and we're not going to pursue this.
Well, that's what he is saying. The new sporting director at the Bianconeri, he has out and out stated that the French World Cup winner will not be becoming a Juventus player again. His time wearing the black and white colours is over. He is loved, but he is no longer wanted on the books, which means there's only one other possibility, maybe two other possibilities where he goes to, Barcelona or somewhere in Paris.
There you go.
They'd be the only two places.
Barcelona for me, if it were to be anywhere else, of course, he will have the opportunity to say hello to his former Juve faithful match day 4 in the Champions League when the Red Devils do travel to Turin to take on Juventus. There, of course, Old Trafford, the two sides will meet match day 3. Of course, the return of Ronaldo to Old Trafford in a Juventus shirt for the first time in his career. Speaking of United, they are still on the lookout for a defender. AS in Spain reporting that Granqvist, the Swedish defender, has confirmed that there is some interest from Manchester United. Of course, Mourinho wanted Alderweireld and he wanted Harry Maguire and he wanted a few others. Boateng was linked very late, Jerome Boateng. No one came in. Maybe January is their time to make a move, and Grunqvist being linked.
And he knows how to play with Victor Lindelof, the current Swedish centre-back pairing. Be very interesting to see the two of them at club level working together.
Very last one, Rick. Antonio Cassano is set to rejoin the Italian football ranks for Virtus Entella, a club in limbo at the moment. Any word as to the point of this?
None. Don't get it. Does he really think he can revive his career and somehow get back into
hasn't
the city?
Hasn't played for a while.
I think his ship has flown and has sailed, and he should not be coming back into the fold.
Well, more on that to come later in the week. On that note, we are done again. Thank you for all of your support and love shown by all our fans and sponsors alike over the last 12 months. We look forward to a big year ahead and all the years to come here at FNR Football Nation Radio. But again, thank you on our first birthday to all of you for your support. We'll leave our show there for now, though. For myself, Adriano Del Monte, this has been Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. We are your voice of football here in Australia and around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.